Chapter 1. What is executive presence? President Obama has it. So does Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg. It's embodied by people as varied as Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt, the late British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, celebrated Burmese parliamentarian Aung San Suu Kyi, and actress Angelina Jolie, especially since she made public her courageous decision to tackle her heritage of breast cancer. Nelson Mandela exuded it. When he donned the Springboks jersey and shook the hand of the captain of the winning all-white national rugby team, the world knew that South Africa had found a leader intent on reconciliation. It is executive presence. And no man or woman attains a top job, lands an extraordinary deal, or develops a significant following without this heady combination of confidence, poise, and authenticity that convinces the rest of us we're in the presence of someone who's the real deal. It's an amalgam of qualities that telegraphs that you are in charge, or deserve to be. And here, I want to underscore the word telegraph. Executive presence is not a measure of performance, whether indeed you hit the numbers, attain the ratings, or actually have a transformative idea. Rather, it's a measure of image, whether you signal to others that you have what it takes, that you're star material. If you're able to crack the EP code, you'll be first in line for the next plum assignment and be given a chance of doing something extraordinary with your life. The amazing thing about EP is that it's a precondition for success, whether you're a cellist, a salesperson, or a Wall Street banker. Every October, a distinguished jury assembles at Merkin Concert Hall in New York City to judge the finalists in the Concert Artists Guild's international competition. Several weeks of rigorous auditions have already taken place, and an applicant pool of 350 instrumentalists and singers from all over the world has been whittled down to 12 extraordinary young musicians. Last fall, I attended the final auditions. A 23-year-old Korean violinist had the first slot in the program. He entered the auditorium from stage left and, after taking a detour behind the Steinway piano, sidled onto the apron of the stage, looking painfully ill at ease. Head bowed, he stared at the floor, doing his best to avoid eye contact with the jurors as he waited for his accompanist to get settled. Unfortunately, it took a while, since she had trouble adjusting the piano stool to the right height. The violinist shifted his weight awkwardly from side to side. I could feel the restlessness rising in the audience. One juror blew his nose, another started tapping her foot. Finally, the accompanist struck the first chords of a glorious and immensely difficult Beethoven sonata, and the violinist raised his instrument and started playing. But it took a while for the audience to be drawn in, to give him a chance. An Irish mezzo-soprano had slot number two. The energy was very different from the get-go. She walked confidently onto the stage, shoulders squared, head held high. Her dress was perfectly chosen, a simple navy blue sheath that conveyed elegance and seriousness of purpose. I spent a moment applauding her choice, but my attention was quickly drawn to her face, which was adorned with a radiant, joyous smile. She seemed to be telling me that something immensely pleasurable and exciting was about to begin. The jury caught the vibe and leaned forward in anticipation, lips parted, wanting and expecting to be impressed. The other finalist who stood out was number seven, a 20-year-old cellist who had just received an extraordinary review for a recording she'd done of the Dvorak cello concerto. As she started playing, I sensed trouble. It was her arms. They flapped. Every time she tackled her cello with a vigorous downbow, the flesh bounced up and down. I was mesmerized, and so were the jurors. The problem was not excessive weight, she was of medium build, but her choice of clothing. Her dress was a disaster, a black silk number with a skimpy, ill-fitting halter top. No wonder her arms flapped, anyone's would in such a get-up. My heart went out to this young musician. A distracted jury is never a good idea. Throughout her 20-minute program, the judges failed to focus their full attention on her music, and her powerful playing did not get its due. These are the finalists that stand out in my memory. Musicians number 1 and 7 did not receive prizes. The mezzo-soprano did.